in the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Pastor David Whitney, and we're going to be talking about the American Constitution, which is really the foundation of this country, why America is different than any other country in the world. And, of course, Pastor Whitney comes from the Institute of the Constitution, which is intent upon trying to educate the American people about what has been taken out of our schools, what has been taken out of our textbooks, what has been taken out of our colleges, and, yes, even out of our law schools. Almost no lawyer who goes to law school today ever reads the Constitution. And why? Because they don't want them to understand what it said. They don't want to understand that liberty and limited federal government are synonymous, and that tyranny and total federal government are synonymous, and we're well on our way towards tyranny. David Whitney, thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, it's a privilege to be on your show, Dr. Stan. I really appreciate the work you do, as well as your listeners. I was actually speaking with one from Ely, Colorado this afternoon who had heard our show this morning, and great patriots who are advancing the cause, and the exciting thing is that anybody can do this. Anybody can actually help educate their fellow Americans, and we'll talk a little bit about how to do that later on in the show, but it's doable. It's not a strategy that takes rocket science to accomplish. Anybody can learn the Constitution. It was written in layman's language. It wasn't written in legalese or lawyerese or what have you so that you couldn't understand it. It's designed to be understood, and we should not listen to the voices today to say, oh, you know, you've got to be a constitutional expert to understand these things. It's so arcane and difficult. It is not. It is plain. The text is designed that way. And as we educate people, the next step then, of course, is for people to take action with the knowledge they have. The first thing, of course, is to evaluate the candidates they're going to put their trust in and grant their precious vote to. And they need to educate themselves to know whether the candidate they're going to vote for truly will abide by the original intent of the Constitution or not.
Well, I think it's so vitally important that people do learn the Constitution, and that is the advantage of the program that's put forward by the Institute of the Constitution. And you mentioned, of course, you were talking to somebody from Greeley, Colorado. We've got a wonderful listening audience there, and in Colorado we do a program there every morning at 8 o'clock their time, from 8 to 9, and it's just amazing to me how many people in that area, after a few years, really begin to understand what's going on.
And when people find, and I find this across the country, that, you know, they say, well, I've learned the Constitution, and I'm asking my candidates the questions. And by the way, we have an excellent set of questions on our website. It's www.iotconline.com. Down the bottom of that first page is your elected official competent? A series of questions that you can ask any elected official, or actually anyone running for office, to ascertain if they are constitutional in their understanding and in their commitments, or are they just another socialist who is going to strip us of our God-given rights, which is what socialists are intent on doing.
Any government that can provide you from the cradle to the grave can, of course, must be able to control you from the cradle to the grave. We'll be back in just a moment with Pastor David Whitney. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon, Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution, and we're talking about the courses that are offered by the Institute to train you and, of course, the people you come in contact with about our wonderful Constitution, why America is different, and, of course, why this Constitution and knowledge of our Constitution has been removed from our textbooks, has been removed from the curriculum in our grammar schools and high schools and colleges, why even than most of our lawyers can go all the way through law school and never read the Constitution. It's an amazing document, and you need to learn about it if you have any hope of living as a free individual in a free society. So, David, pick up the story there.
Well, just to mention the end result of that strategy of what we're doing overall, we're educating ourselves. First priority, each individual, each citizen needs to learn and understand the foundational documents, the Constitution, the Declaration, the Bill of Rights. Then they need to educate everybody they can in their circle of influence, starting with their own family members and then beyond that, their church family and their larger community, building a grassroots network of people. And then, again, checking the candidates to find out what they stand for. Are they constitutional or are they unconstitutional? Some candidates can be educated and changed, and there's a lot, I think, that cannot be, and therefore we need to replace them. And people ask me all the time, you know, I've asked candidates and all the questions that you've suggested, and they come back with the wrong answers again and again and again. What's the purpose of government? They basically give a socialist answer rather than the purpose of government, as the Declaration says, is to secure your God-given rights, like God-given right to life, to liberty and property and so on. And they say, what do I do? You know, all the candidates on both major parties, they all answer with a socialist answer. I said, well, then you need to run. And that's a big step, but Dr. Stan, I've been telling people this for a number of years now, and so I finally have taken the plunge myself, and I am going for the House of Delegates here in Annapolis, a bastion of liberalism. Well, liberalism is the wrong word, I should say socialism, and by God's grace will make a difference, and in the process we will educate a wider circle of people about these issues of what is constitutional, what is not constitutional, and if there is no rule of law except what comes out of the mouth of a black-robed lawyer who sits behind the bench, none of us have freedom any longer. Our liberty has been taken, and we are under the oligarchy of black-robed lawyers. And that's a very dangerous position that our founders would have never wanted us to be in. Which leads us to our discussion this afternoon is Article 3 of the Constitution.
All right, fine. Well, before we get to Article 3 of the Constitution, which deals with the judiciary, I'll hold that just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon, Pastor David Whitney, and we're going through the Constitution step by step to teach you, and maybe some of you listen regularly, and you've gone through this before. But you know what Article 3 deals with? It deals with the judiciary. What does the Article Section 2 of Article 3 deal with? Well, you're going to learn all of these things today. So, David, you pick up the story.
Well, as we've discussed before, Article 1 deals with the legislative branch, Article 2 deals with the executive, and Article 3, the judicial branch. And actually, it's interesting to do a word count and to see that the legislative details are much greater, much larger in number than the executive. That's smaller, and the judiciary is even smaller, which is in a sense, and the order is also important. They put the legislative first because they believe that was to be the most powerful branch of government, the executive next, and the least powerful was to be the judiciary. As a matter of fact, people like Alexander Hamilton thought there'd be no problem from the judiciary. They don't have the right to do anything but to apply the law as it is written and enacted by the legislative branch. And obviously he didn't have the kind of foresight to see what has developed in our day, where the judicial branch has in many ways become the most tyrannical and the most abusive of all the branches of government.
Well, because, you know, Jefferson actually foresaw that. And if you go ahead, and I have a wonderful book I keep beside me all the time, The Master Thoughts of Thomas Jefferson. And on page 139 of that book, and he basically says this. He says, "It has long been my opinion, and I have never shrunk from its expression, that the germ of dissolution of our federal government is in the constitution of our federal judiciary. An irresponsible body for impeachment is scarcely a scarecrow, working like gravity by night and by day, gaining a little today and a little tomorrow, and advancing its noiseless step like a thief over the field of jurisdiction until all shall be usurped from the states and the government of all be consolidated into one. And to this I am opposed, because when all government, domestic and foreign, in little as in great things, shall be drawn to Washington as the center of all power, will render powerless the checks of one government on another, and will become as venal and oppressive as the government from which we separated. Isn't that so true today?
It's a prophetic statement that he was making, basically, that that's what we're under. And there's many books being published currently that decry the kind of judicial oligarchy and judicial tyranny and the out-of-control courts or courts in chaos. There's a spate of books that deal with this, and they're right in saying that the judiciary is out of control. The judiciary has become tyrannical, and no one's rights really are safe when they go into court. Most Americans fear going to court because they know if they go to court, they're likely to lose their shirt, either from the judge behind the bench, that lawyer, or from the lawyer that they hire who strips them of everything they own. They know that it's a bad deal to go to court, and you avoid it by any means possible these days. Well, Article 3 deals with the judicial branch, and Section 1 of Article 3 speaks about the establishment of the courts and the judges, and it states that judicial power vests, that is, permanently resides in the Supreme Court. In other words, the Supreme Court is the only federal court that our Constitution requires to exist. If the Supreme Court was the only federal court in the land, that would be perfectly constitutional. It adds, then, any lower courts are as Congress determines, which means all the lower courts, the federal circuit courts and district courts and all the appeals courts and so forth, below the Supreme Court on the federal level, I'm not talking about state courts, but the federal courts, all those other federal courts are under the complete control of Congress. Congress creates them. Congress can change them. It can alter them. It can fire at will any judge it chooses. Doesn't even have to go through a process of impeachment. Those judges, all those federal judges, are at the beck and call of Congress. They are answerable to Congress, which is an astonishing idea, because most people hear congressmen wringing their hands and saying, like, oh, when the Ninth District Circuit Court out in the West said, oh, you can't say under God in the Pledge of Allegiance. Oh, we had congressmen wringing their hands. Oh, what can we do? A federal judge has ruled that you can't say under God in the pledge. Oh, I know what we'll do. We'll create a piece of legislation that says we support saying under God in the Pledge of Allegiance. Well, that's ludicrous. If these congressmen don't know the Constitution, don't know Article 3, they need to be removed from office. And if they do know it, what they're doing is specifically deceiving the American public. They know most of the American public have never read through the Constitution, do not know the provisions of Article 3, do not know that all the federal courts below the Supreme Court are under the complete control of Congress, and Congress can punish them, Congress can fire them, Congress can change their jurisdiction, Congress can do a whole host of things to prevent judicial tyranny in the federal realm.
But I think even more than that, Congress can limit the appellate jurisdiction of the Supreme Court. So all they have to do is pass a law saying, you know, abortion is illegal. At least the federal government will have nothing to do with abortion. We'll return this decision and this matter to the states, and put on an addition in saying, and the Supreme Court does not have the right to deal with this issue. In other words, they limit the appellate jurisdiction of the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court can fuss all it wants to. It does not have the right to override the legislature according to Section 2 of Article 3 of the Constitution. That is, for those people in the Supreme Court who have ever read the Constitution.
And probably many of them have not. As you mentioned earlier, law schools no longer even require reading the Constitution, let alone going back and say, what did the signers and those who penned these words, what did those who drafted and framed their Constitution, what did they mean by what they said? We can quickly ascertain what they meant. They wrote it down in such things as the Federalist Papers, which in a sense are kind of a commentary on the Constitution, as well as many writings like of our founders that you can peruse to discover what they meant by the words that were on that paper. It's not a mystery. It is discoverable. But they, the tyrants, don't want us to discover those meanings, because if we do, then we'll discover we've been had.
And that we have people sitting on the Supreme Court who do not believe in the Constitution, who believe it is an evolving, living document that can be changed. And, of course, it can be changed by men. We have government not by law, but by men and by women like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, referred to often as sleepy, because she sleeps during many of the things going on in the Supreme Court. But, you know, we have people who will make the laws. They're not doing what they've sworn to uphold the Constitution. They're intent upon changing it. And this is what happens in any dictatorship as we move from freedom towards feudalism, towards fascism, and believe me, we're well on the way, because we have people in the judiciary who do not believe in our Constitution. They want to go over to Europe to see what they're doing there, to figure what our Constitution should say, and then, of course, modify it. And where is the outcry from our Christian leaders? Where is the outcry from our conservative leaders? Where is the outcry from our Christian president saying, you don't have the right to do that? We've sworn to uphold the Constitution, and we will abide by it.
And so the action that should be taken against these Supreme Court justices who are not following the Constitution, as well as all the federal judges who are not following the Constitution, is Congress should be firing or impeaching them. You see, judges, the mistaken idea, and you could hear this in the confirmation hearings of Judge Roberts and Alito and so on, the assumption of the senators was, well, once you pass through this checkpoint, we the senators, then you're in office for life. That is a lie. That is not what the Constitution says. It says the judges hold office during good behavior. Good behavior being defined as fidelity to their oath of office. You read the oath for any Supreme Court or federal judge, and an oath is to uphold the Constitution. So if they refuse to do what they have sworn to do, they can be removed from office, particularly those lower federal courts. Any of them can be removed from office by Congress any time it chooses. The Supreme Court is a little bit of a higher standard, but nonetheless, they are only in office on good behavior, which means whenever they violate the Constitution, whenever they issue an opinion, and by the way, that's all courts issue, courts don't make law. You need to remember that. They don't make law. The legislative branch makes law. Courts are supposed to apply law, but when they make law, then they need to be removed from the bench, because that's not good behavior. Now, framers wanted judges to be insulated from political pressure, and so, for example, Gouverneur Morris, who was actually the one who crafted the final wording for our Constitution, so he was part of the Constitutional Convention, and he said, those who are charged with the important duties of administering justice should, if possible, depend only on God. Wow, what an amazing statement, particularly in light of today's judges, because they knew that the law of God, the supreme law of the universe, which in the Declaration is called the laws of nature and nature's God, they knew that that is the ultimate law that a judge is to look to. Secondarily, of course, a judge is to look to the supreme law of the land. So you could say the supreme law of the universe first, the supreme law of the land second, and they are to apply what is in any law that's in concord with the supreme law of the universe and the supreme law of the land. And they are therefore to look to God for their dependence. Well, this is completely upside down today, and someone who claims to be a Christian, Judge Roberts, when he was going through his confirmation hearings, he made it blatantly clear in his statement that he would never look to the Bible, which is God's law, the supreme law of the universe, he would never look to the Bible to influence any of his decisions on the Supreme Court. He swore to the senators that that was the case, which means he's completely 180 degrees opposite of what our founders and the first Supreme Court justices and so on believed, that God's law, the Bible, is absolute law. Any law made in violation of God's law is null and void. In fact, it's no law at all.
And I think the great and tragic thing is that once again we've put people into the Supreme Court who do not believe in God's leading. You know, they do not believe that they are answerable to God. Oh, I wouldn't let the Bible in any way influence my decision. Is Judge Roberts really a Christian who's going to lead us away from this judicial tyranny, or is he going to go along with it? Well, we'll be back in just a moment here with David Whitney, but these are all questions. Have we really been sold out once again? Have we been deceived by the people who control the media? Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Go ahead, David.
Well, just to finish up Article 3, Section 1, the last statements there, that is the compensation for judges may not be diminished during tenure. That's one thing that cannot take place. And, of course, this prevents congressional interference with their duties. However, the budgets of judges can be altered if that's one punishment the Congress would choose to bring upon a judge who's recalcitrant and they don't want to quite remove him from the bench, but they want to make the point, hey, you continue in this vein and you're going to face further discipline from us. They could cut his staff, cut his budget, many things they could do. Which brings us to Section 2, which is what you've already talked about, the jurisdiction of the federal courts. And the first thing we need to understand is what the original jurisdiction is for the Supreme Court and all federal courts. The original jurisdiction means that a case that goes directly to the Supreme Court and not to any state court. It would go first to the Supreme Court or to the federal courts, and if it was appealed up to the Supreme Court. And there's a very small group of cases that would be what's called original in terms of the original jurisdiction for the Supreme Court. And these would be cases that involve foreign officials, such as ambassadors or so forth, cases involving admiralty or maritime law, say a crime was committed out at sea, and it's very difficult for, you know, states to deal with that, but that would be a role for the federal judiciary. Also, controversies between states, so maybe the state of Alabama and the state of North Carolina are in a conflict and bring it into court, well, that again would be appropriate for the federal judiciary to handle. Cases that involve diversity of citizenship, that is, citizens from foreign countries and involved in lawsuits, or even citizens between two different states. Say you had a citizen in the state of Alabama and a citizen in the state of North Carolina in a conflict, well, you know, either court system, if it was held in Alabama's court system or North Carolina, would obviously be an unfair advantage, you know, the home court advantage for the one who's had it in their own home state. So, obviously, those also are appropriate for the federal judiciary. And then, of course, suits involved between a state and a citizen of another state. Say, a citizen of Alabama was suing the state of North Carolina for breach of contract or something. Well, again, either court system of either state that would be in would be an unfair advantage to one side or the other. So again, that's appropriate for the federal judiciary. Those are the only examples, the only place where there is original jurisdiction. This very narrow range of cases are the only place where it goes to the federal court immediately. All other cases are appealed up through the state court system and then eventually appealed into the federal system. And we need to understand that our founders did not design the federal court system, the Supreme Court, to be the final arbiters of all things constitutional. As a matter of fact, Thomas Jefferson, I'll paraphrase what he said, he basically said, it's a very dangerous doctrine to say that judges are the final arbiters of what is constitutional. That's a dangerous doctrine indeed. Our judges are, you know, as honest as other men. But if we were to do this, we would be under the despotism of an oligarchy. And again, Jefferson foresaw what was, you know, brewing in the future. I guess he saw hints or seeds of it in his own day. One case, while Jefferson was president, was Marbury v. Madison in 1803. Here, Chief Justice John Marshall interpreted the language to authorize the judicial, what's called judicial review.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and of course our guest this afternoon, Pastor David Whitney. We're talking about this concept of judicial review, and of course it really comes out of the case of Marbury versus Madison during Thomas Jefferson's time as a president. So could you explain to us what the real significance of this case was? Because I really think most of this has been misinterpreted.
Yes, it has, because today we're told that Marbury v. Madison established that the Supreme Court is the final arbiter on all questions regarding the Constitution. That is, if there's a debate between the president and the legislature, or even between, you know, the states and the federal government, if there's any debate about what the Constitution means, it's the Supreme Court that's the final arbiter of that decision, and their answer is final, which is why things like people say, oh, you know, Roe v. Wade is the law of the land. Wait a minute, courts don't make law. How can Roe v. Wade, opinion, that's all it is, an opinion by the, how can that be the law of the land? Well, most people, it's a shorthand for, well, once the Supreme Court decides something, that this is what's constitutional, that's the end of the argument, there's nothing that can be changed at all. That's not what Marbury v. Madison says. In fact, the argument there is that Justice Marshall was saying that the Constitution permits the judicial branch, the Supreme Court, to review legislation. That is, it can look at a piece of legislation that's been passed by the House and the Senate and signed by the President. It can look at it and say, well, wait a minute, I don't think you guys are right here. You guys were wrong, and this is unconstitutional. And then again, there's a wrestling that goes on between the three branches. But Marbury v. Madison was not saying that the Supreme Court is above the other three branches or has the final say on judicial review. No, it was saying they have an equal power of judicial. They have the power of judicial review. President has the power of executive review, and obviously the legislature that creates the law reviews the law. And in a few moments, we'll talk about another branch of government. There really is four branches of government, I believe, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes, that also reviews the law to determine if it is valid or not. So Marbury v. Madison, we've been lied to about what it actually states. It does not make the Supreme Court the final arbiter of all constitutional decisions. As a matter of fact, Jefferson, who was president at the time, he strongly disagreed with this ruling. And basically he said, well, that's fine for the Supreme Court to have their opinion. That's their opinion. Let them come over here and enforce it. You see, the Supreme Court can issue their opinion like Roe v. Wade and say, oh, all state laws, which is basically what Roe v. Wade is saying, all state laws regarding abortion are unconstitutional because a woman has an unmeasured right to murder her unborn baby. That's basically what their opinion says. Well, Jefferson, had he been alive at that time, would have said, no, wait a minute. They can't enforce that ruling. And he, if Jefferson was president at that point in time, he could have done what he did in his day and say, let them come over here and enforce that. As for me, the president, I am going to command my attorney general to prosecute every abortion. And you know, our current president, if he was truly pro-life, could end abortion today by doing the same thing. Michael Peruca, when he was running as the Constitution Party candidate, said that on the first day that he took office, he would end abortion in America. And he no need to overturn Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade's an opinion, it's not law. And the president is the one who executes the law. The president could issue an order that says, we consider the personhood of the unborn to be protected by the Fifth Amendment, therefore all those in the executive branch are to use their full prosecutorial power to prosecute every abortion as murder.
And I think it's so important that people really understand what really happened with Roe versus Wade. It was 1972 when the Club of Rome, which is an elitist group made up of some of the wealthiest people in the world, published a book called The Limits of Growth that said there are too many people in the world. We're running out of water. We're running out of natural resources. But the important thing is there are too many people in the world. We've got to begin limiting the population. And that, of course, directive went out all across the world. They began doing a study here in America called the National Security Study Memorandum 200, which came out in 1994, but it was in 1993 that the Supreme Court suddenly discovered that a woman had a right to kill the child within her. 1974, they came out with the National Security Study Memorandum 200, which said that there's just too many people in the world, and the major thrust of American foreign policy would begin to limit the populations of nations throughout the world. And, of course, that's why we're investing so much money in that today. We give literally hundreds of million dollars every year, about $400 million of our population control, financing abortion and, of course, contraception throughout the world. We even helped to fund the one-child policy in communist China, but we can't let the American people know that because that was an evil thing. We've killed 50 million people, human beings in our own country, and then there's nobody, of course, to pay into the Social Security Fund for future generations. We've done the same thing in China. China doesn't know how they're going to finance all their elderly because they've killed off all of their children with help and support from the American government. And, of course, it all goes back to Roe versus Wade, 1973. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. We're talking about, does the Supreme Court make laws, or are they to interpret the Constitution? Pick up the story there, David.
And so we were talking about the original jurisdiction, that is, cases that would go directly to the federal branch and go through that process are very narrow, just involving foreign officials, states as parties, and so forth. All the other cases, Roe v. Wade being an example, are appellate cases. That is, they're appealed up through the state system, ultimately appealed into the federal system, and appealed all the way up to the Supreme Court. All the appellate jurisdictions of not only the lower federal courts, but also of the Supreme Court, as you mentioned earlier, all those appellate decisions can be restricted by Congress. Congress has a full check on the power to limit the court's appellate jurisdiction. They could basically say, the court can't rule on abortion. They could pass a law today in Congress to say, all abortions are illegal in America, and the Supreme Court and all the federal courts cannot rule at all on this piece of legislation we have just passed. They could outlaw abortion just as the president could outlaw abortion. What we have, basically, is due to the ignorance of Americans of their Constitution, we're being lied to by the president, being lied to by most congressmen who are pro-life to say, oh, we really can't do anything, you know, well, until we overturn Roe v. Wade, until we get the right Supreme Court justice and the other associate justices on the side, well, you know, it'll just go on until we get, and basically they're saying, we concede all power to the Supreme Court, and we can't do anything, which gets them off the hook, of course, from doing what constitutionally is their duty to check the power of the Supreme Court and to prevent the Supreme Court from abusing its power. And so while, yes, there is a good hue and cry among conservatives that judicial tyranny is terrible, evil, there should be an equally strong cry that it's the wicked congressmen who are not doing their duty, who either do not know the Constitution, or if they do know the Constitution, they're deceiving their own constituents about their responsibility, and that should be just as loudly shouted from the rooftops as the current discussion on judicial tyranny. So they can, Congress can, rein in this out-of-control judiciary, but it has not chosen to do so, and I believe the reason why is they know most Americans don't know the Constitution, and therefore they can get away with lying to the American people about this. And they won't pay at the polls. They won't be removed from office unless the Americans discover this, which is exactly why we're spreading this program all over the country and want to raise an army of Americans who will take our country back from the pagans and return it to the godly constitutional government designed by our founders.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest, Pastor David Whitney. David, I want you to get out your telephone number, your website, so people find out how they can get in touch with the Institute of the Constitution. Hopefully, they'll get a packet. Hopefully, they'll begin to teach this in their community, in their church. If we cannot educate the American people about what 50 years ago every American knew, but you see, the wicked people have taken over our schools, they've taken over our textbooks, they've taken over our universities, they've taken over our law schools, and the average American really doesn't understand the Constitution. How can you maintain your freedom if you don't understand our form of government? Most people think we're a democracy. We're not a democracy, we're a republic. And there's all the difference between a republic and a democracy as there is between night and day. So how can people get in touch with you and the Institute?
As we shared earlier, our strategy first is educating ourselves and our families and friends and churches, and from that beginning to hold our elected officials accountable and replace them with people, perhaps even ourselves, if we cannot find one who will follow the Constitution. We have what we call a host kit. We want to encourage people to do this because we know people will be kind of afraid if they hear, well, you're going to teach the Constitution. You're not actually doing the teaching. 12 half-hour lectures by constitutional law professor Dr. Eidsmo, who shares the Christian history of our land. He shares the original intent of the founding documents, the Declaration, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, to give you a working knowledge, and truly anyone to be a citizen who can fulfill their duty must have a working knowledge of the founding documents, be conversant in them enough that they can analyze a candidate, listen to the promises of a candidate, and decide, is this candidate going to follow the Constitution, or is he already telling me before he takes his oath of office he's going to break the Constitution? To get our host kit, you can call us toll-free and purchase it. Our toll-free number is 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or Actually, you can also visit us on our website and go to our web store. Our website is iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com. And Dr. Stan, we've designed this really as a turnkey program. You don't have to have any expertise in history or law. Actually, every lawyer I talked to who's come through our program said, you're better off not having a law degree because you don't have to unlearn all the lies in order to learn the truth. You just start out fresh. And a simple turnkey method, we give a student manual with the host kit that gives a detailed outline of the entire course with test questions and review questions, and then a host manual, an additional notebook that gives the host all the answers to those test questions as well as specific instructions about how to conduct each session of the 12-week session. If you do it as a 12-week, we know some people have done it in 6 weeks or 3 weeks and various means to accomplish that. But as this message gets out, the encouraging thing is people began to wake up and be able to look at what's happening in our country and recognize that what our founders designed is being violated on a daily basis in Washington, D.C., and in most state capitals as well. So they can go to our website and order it online or call us on our toll-free number. And we want to help those who are hosting, because I know one of the fears most people have is that, well, you know, somebody's going to raise their hand. You know, in my class, somebody's going to raise their hand and ask a question I don't have the answer to. Well, those who host and purchase a host kit, we give them a communication line with us so that if they get their question to us, a constitutional question that they don't have the answer to, we will get the answer back to them in a timely fashion. So if they are meeting once a week or whatever, that by the time their next session, they say, well, I didn't have the answer last week, but I brought it now, and the Institute on the Constitution has helped me answer this question.
And I think what's really so exciting is that there are these classes being formed all across America. Mm-hmm. And I think, what are you, in 47 states, you've had classes, you've had classes started, and so really, this is an idea whose time has come. The question is, if you're out there in the listening audience, are you going to get involved? Because we're in a race against time. There really are people who want to destroy America. And they want, of course, to do away with our national sovereignty. That's what this whole immigration issue is about. They really want to destroy our currency, destroy the savings and wealth of the American people, and replace our currency with something called an Amero. And, of course, the only way we're going to preserve our country is for the American people to understand that most of what goes on in Washington, D.C. is frankly unconstitutional, and these people should be tried for treason. And, of course, the only way we're going to do that is through the Institute of the Constitution. And what's so exciting, David, is you're getting these classes out all across America, aren't you?
That's right. Actually, for example, the fellow I was talking to at Greeley this afternoon said he was very excited because as a result of his class, there was a class forming over in Fort Collins, which is just a little ways away, but far enough to be a separate community there. And so the class in Fort Collins had twice as many people as his class. So he was very encouraged that there in northern Colorado there's a growing movement of patriots who are understanding what our founders really intended and understanding how far off the mark we are today. And if we can raise that kind of army, we can turn our nation back and prevent the kind of tyranny that is growing very rapidly in our day.
And of course, the battle for freedom is not being fought in Iraq and Afghanistan. The battle for freedom is being fought here. And maybe you're not in a position to, you know, go overseas and fight or go overseas and be a missionary. There's a great missionary field in here in America. And this whole effort to destroy our Constitution is a spiritual attack on the souls of our people. You must understand that freedom and certainly our relationship with God are inseparable. And we are a free country because we are a religious people. And as de Tocqueville had said, America is great because America is good. But if America ever ceases to be good, America will cease to be great. And how many people in the audience really think when we see what's going on overseas, what's going on television, in the movies, what's being taught in our schools, what's being discussed, you know, certainly on MTV, how many people really think we're still a good country? We got good people, but the nation, unfortunately, the means of communication and our political system has been taken over by the wicked people. So you pick up the story there, David.
Yes, the encouraging thing is that anyone can do this. This is not, it doesn't take an expert. It's actually better not to have an expert. Anyone can conduct this, and it's an easy thing for a person to do. It's not, you know, going out and laying your life down on the line here. It's just a very simple and easy way. And every Bible-believing church in America should be teaching this because Jesus requires it. Did you know that? Jesus said, "When you render, you must render to Caesar the things that are Caesar, and render to God the things that are God's." Well, in America, we don't have a Caesar, in spite of the fact the president might like to think he is. He's not. In America, we don't have a single man who has the kind of power that Caesar had in Jesus' day. Instead, we have a supreme law of the land. What is it? It's the Constitution. And so for a Christian to obey Jesus' command to render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, he's got to know what Caesar's demands are and what his responsibilities are as a citizen. And he will only know that when he studies the supreme law of the land, and that is the U.S. Constitution. So basically, to obey what Jesus commanded us to do as his disciples. Jesus said, go make disciples, teaching them to obey everything that I've commanded you. This is one of those commands that's been neglected in America. We need to every church needs to be teaching people the biblical foundations and teaching them the original intent of the Constitution so they can fulfill their duty and obey Christ's commands as a Christian citizen. Well, stepping on to the last part of Section 2 of Article 3, the jurisdiction of the courts, it secures that we have a right to a trial by jury in all federal criminal cases, with the exception of impeachment, because impeachment is actually handled, you know, by the House beginning articles of impeachment, the Senate holding a trial. So it's a different process there of impeachment. But all federal crimes have a right to trial by jury, and the trial shall be in the state where the crime was allegedly committed, and the trial by jury will be a jury of common citizens, and those common citizens are a very important check upon the abuse of government power by judges and prosecutors. No federal judge or state judge across America today, and I've talked to some very good ones who are godly judges, and they didn't know about this, they didn't understand this part of it, this was never taught to them in law school, that in criminal cases, the jury's job is to judge the law as well as to judge the facts. And no one will tell you that, because if you have that knowledge, then you recognize as a juror, you are in a more powerful position than the judge. Actually, you're the most significant person in that courtroom because you judge the law as well as the facts. You see, our founders established a kind of, you could almost say, a four-branch government. Yes, you have the legislative branch creating the law and writing a law that is only legitimate if it's in concord with the Constitution of the United States, the supreme law of the land, as well as the supreme law of the universe, God's law. So if they write a piece of legislation they think is in concert with God's law and the supreme law of the land, the Constitution, then the president receives it and he may sign off it. So he makes a review of the law and says, okay, yeah, this is constitutional and so on. And then the judicial branch can weigh in on the particular law and give their opinion if the law is constitutional or not. Now, most people assume that's the end of the story. If the Supreme Court says it's constitutional, it must be constitutional. No, no, no. Our founders never wanted a tyranny that would allow those three branches of government to violate the God-given rights of people. They had a fourth branch of government that could checkmate all the other three branches of government and say, wait a minute, you have violated either the supreme law of the universe with this piece of legislation, or you have violated the supreme law of the land with this piece of legislation, and you may say this person is guilty, but this person is not guilty, not because the facts of the case prove him innocent, but rather because the law itself that you have passed and signed is itself not law. It is illegitimate. For example, take all the gun control laws. What are all the gun control laws? There's like the Brady stuff. All those gun control laws are a violation of the Second Amendment. They're a violation of the supreme law of the land, which means they are not law. But you're going to hear that in any courtroom in the land, that you as the jury have the right in a federal criminal case to say, sure, the evidence is against this guy that he violated this Brady gun law or what have you, but this Brady gun law itself is on trial here, and we, the jury, are the ones that determine if this law is constitutional or if this law is not constitutional.
And if you're talking about jury nullification, which was part of our original law, it is
right.
Still part of our law, and the one thing is they don't want the jurors to know that.
They never want them to, because they would recognize that juries would begin to strike down unconstitutional laws and ungodly laws, because that's the other element of it. There's two standards. Does the law meet the standard that it's in agreement with God's law? And does the law meet the standard of agreement that it is with in agreement with the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. So you could look at a law that says, yeah, that looks constitutional, but it's in violation of God's law that we read in the Bible. So a good juror is a juror who knows the Bible and then knows the supreme law of the land, the Constitution, and therefore can evaluate the piece of legislation even before looking at the facts and saying, this law is or this law is not good, and we're going to throw the law out. And in the history of our land, this has happened many times, where juries continually have nullified a bad piece of legislation and basically ultimately overturned it. An example comes to mind in the lead-up to the war between the states. It was the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850. Well, in the northern states that had a large abolitionist community, those laws were impossible to enforce. The law basically said if you did anything to help a runaway slave, even giving him a glass of water, he comes back to your back door, you give him a glass of water, you have helped him, and therefore you have committed a crime in violation of the Fugitive Slave Law. And you could be brought to trial, but the good thing was those trials were always held before a jury. And in certain states, there was no conviction. Time after time after time and again, people were dragged into court for having violated the Fugitive Slave Act, and the jury said, this is not a law. This is in violation of God's law. God says, you help somebody who's in need, and so, a good Samaritan giving a glass of water to this runaway slave has not committed a crime at all. This law is bad, and we nullify. And eventually, prosecutors stopped trying to even prosecute people who helped runaway slaves because they knew you could never get a conviction in those areas. Another example, of course, comes during Prohibition, 18th Amendment, a bad piece of legislation by anybody's measure. And as they attempted to enforce Prohibition with draconian measures, going out and get somebody who's making moonshine out in the back 40 and that sort of thing is what they were going after, the local juries would never convict them. It's like, hey, that person has a right to distill liquor on their own property for whatever use they want. They want to sell it. They want to consume it themselves. They have a right to do that. And no federal revenue agent has the right to take that away from them. That's a God-given right. And so there was a war against the 18th Amendment that was taking place in the courtroom as the juries refused to convict again and again and again and again. So it got to a point when you couldn't prosecute somebody for violation of the 18th Amendment. And ultimately, the popular opinion was so strong that the 18th Amendment was overturned with the 21st Amendment. So another example would be the draft dodging in Vietnam. Again, many of these were nullified, and you may or may not agree with that. I personally agree with it because a draft is actually a violation of the 13th Amendment that says no involuntary servitude shall be permitted in these United States. In other words, the draft is involuntary servitude. The federal government saying, we're going to take you and we're going to put you in the Army, whether you like it or not, and we're going to force you to go to war. And that is against the founders' principles. You could be drafted for war if it was a defensive war on our own soil. We were attacked. We were invaded, like we're being invaded from Mexico right now. Then you could be drafted and be forced to serve. But if it was a foreign war, not on our soil, not defending our borders, then you could not draft an American. It could only be a volunteer who would go to such a foreign war. And so I agree with those who said those draft laws were unconstitutional, and juries regularly nullified those cases back in the 60s. So you'll never hear that anywhere else. There's a few other places that talk about the jury nullification, but if you ever serve on a jury, remember those facts. Don't share them with anybody because they'll knock you off the potential jury pool before you even get a chance. Don't mention that you know that until you actually get in the deliberation room and talking with other jurors. Evaluate the law for yourself, know your Constitution, know the Bible, know God's laws so that you can evaluate unjust laws and, as a juror, strike them down. You may not get all the other jurors to agree with you, but if you stand out as one individual against the other 11, you can get a hung jury, and a hung jury is better than accusing somebody or saying they are guilty of something that is not a crime. We have a lot of that taking place in our land today where people are charged with things that are not crimes according to God's law and according to our U.S. Constitution. Well, moving from Section 2, stepping into Section 3 deals with treason. And treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort.
Well, we're just about out of time. David, I want you to get your telephone number and your website on one more time.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Our toll-free number is 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. And our website is iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com.
All right, you hang on there. We'll be back in just a moment here to wrap up today's program right here at Radio Liberty. And remember, if you don't know the Constitution, how can you hope to maintain your freedom? Well, David, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
We'll talk just briefly then about treason. And treason was very important to be clearly defined, because in England, and the kind of situation that they came out of, you could be convicted of having treasonous thoughts. That is, you had thoughts that were against the king or against the parliament and so forth. And so in America, Puritans taught that conscience was beyond the government's jurisdiction. So treason had to include, it had to be acts against the government, not thoughts against the government. Well, my friends, unfortunately, we have gone back to the bad old days of England with things like the Patriot Act, where you can be accused of this sort of things and be treated as if you are a terrorist. All they have to do is label you as a terrorist by whatever definition they want to use. As a matter of fact, one FBI unit out in Arizona published a brochure. I think, Dr. Stan, you have it available. That the brochure basically says, training policemen, identify anyone who talks about the Constitution as a terrorist. So if you talk to the police officer about your constitutional rights, they were training police officers, the FBI was training police officers to say, such people as you and I are terrorists because we want the rule of our Constitution returned to.
And, of course, what's really interesting about that is that time the Phoenix office knew all about the Islamic terrorists, and they didn't even mention them one time. They did mention people who talked about Christianity, people who believed in the end times, people who talked about the Constitution. And you have to ask yourself, why didn't the Phoenix FBI office mention Islamic terrorism when they were investigating Islamic terrorism? Is it they didn't want the public to know? Go ahead, David.
And so we, as Americans, need to demand that our federal government get off the evil track they're on of basically trying to prosecute people for having treasonous thoughts. This includes all hate crime legislation. Hate crime legislation basically is a violation of this element, Section 3 here of Article 3 of the Constitution says treasonous actions alone can be prosecuted, not treasonous thoughts. That if you have a set of ideas that are unpopular, out of ideas that other people think are crazy, you still have a right to hold those ideas. What is can be judged, however, are your actions. If you take behavioral actions to do direct damage, that and that alone can be prosecuted as a crime. We live in a day where many Americans are far too willing to yield up their God-given rights to freedom of conscience here to be able to have thoughts that may not be popular, willing to give that over, and we should not be. We should fight tooth and nail to say, no, we will not allow hate crimes legislation.
David, we're out of time. God bless you. We'll talk to you again real soon. Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will give a serious thought to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and on a regular basis, send in a contribution, and when you join the Radio Liberty family, you get our 4 best tapes or CDs of the month, you get our newsletter, but more than that, you're helping us. And if you'd like to know more about Radio Liberty, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, or certainly go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. We're carrying health products and all sorts of vitamins and the various other things and products that you need, other minerals and herbs and things like that. And, of course, this will help us, and we think you ought to have a good supply of these on hand, because if the situation goes as we fear that it will, while you may not be able to get access to these things at all, there really is a conspiracy against your health. If you don't believe that, you need to get either the DVD or the VHS that we did, Planned Population Reduction. They've killed hundreds of millions of people in the last several decades throughout the world. Planned population reduction. They know exactly what they're doing. They killed almost 100 million by outlawing DDT with no justification. If you believe the stories, about the background of the birds' shells being soft, it was simply because they took the calcium out of the diet of the birds. And when they put it back in again, why, of course, the bird shells were normal. But, of course, the major scientific magazines wouldn't publish those because, you see, they wanted to outlaw DDT because it was saving so many lives. And 100 million people have died. We've killed 50 million unborn children here in this country and financed the deaths of hundreds of millions of unborn children throughout the world. And then, of course, what are we going to do for Social Security? There are no children to pay into Social Security. Well, we're going to have all the immigrants come in to keep our Social Security system from falling apart. And what are they going to do in China? There's nobody to take care of the elderly. What's going to happen? You see, between man's plan in time and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. You need to get our Planned Population Reduction DVD or video. You need to get my video on population control, our 4-tape set on population control, my monograph, and you can get it on our internet site, the Population Control Agenda Monograph. You need to have this information. You need to study it. You need to get our syllabus and our VHS on water fluoridation. You need to understand that they're poisoning our children. You need to get our 4-tape sets on aspartame or the DVD on aspartame or the book, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. Understand they're poisoning our children. You need to get our 4-tape sets on vaccines. You need to get our material on mercury, our VHS, or you need to get the book that goes into the background of mercury toxicity. We have the book, The Virus and the Vaccine. We have the book, Vaccine A. You need to understand what they're doing with vaccines and how they're impacting on our people. Would anybody intentionally harm people? Of course they would. They've wanted to kill the 50 million children we've killed in America. Understand we're dealing with organized evil. And if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, has seen the DVD or VHS, you need to get it. The telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, if you'd like to get a free copy of a newsletter, you'd like to get our health catalog or our regular catalog, give us a call. But we need to get you informed so you'll inform others, because we're in a race against time. We're on the verge of a financial collapse. If you haven't seen our material in the financial tsunami, that's the financial tsunami, you need to get it. We're on the edge of a war, expanding the war in the Middle East. We're in a moral crisis in America, and believe me, America is changing and changing very rapidly, so pray for America. Pray for revival, pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until Monday, may the Lord be with you.